is the Aiken Mark I computer. I put it here because if you go over to the Harvard Science Center, which is a couple of blocks away, you can actually see it. Or to be precise, you can see about a third of it. But that's what a computer looked like. It did about 3 editions per second, I think, something like that. All of these dials here were little head-to-head, contained a digit from 1 to 10. So you can sort of count up how many 20-digit numbers you could store in this thing. And here are some computers today. Okay, we got an iPhone, we got an iPod. So one point I want to make is that these are, I won't bother doing calculation of how much more powerful these things are than those things, but all of these dimensions have obviously, this had pretty much no communication except through some wires maybe, but there was nothing really to connect it to. These devices both have communication through radio and through other means. I guess the iPod typically doesn't have a radio communication, but phone does. And it's got the sensors, and it's got the other things as well. Storage, obviously, you've now got, these are now big enough to hold, you know, thousands of songs, movies, whatever. But the thing I want to stress here is that these are computers. You know, we think of them as phones and, you know, MP3 players or something like that. But that's just because they've been equipped with a certain kind of peripheral accessories to make them have speakers and microphones or whatever it is, cameras and so on. But the important thing is that embedded in each of these is a processor, and computer programmers write code that make these things run. Okay, so let's talk about how we got from the Mark I to the iPhone. Okay, and the story actually begins a little more than 50 years ago. This is Toy Day. Rarely are we going to have such opportunities for me to bring in toys. This is the way this is actually after the stage of the Mark I, but this is the way electronic components used to be made. This is actually a component of a computer that was built around 1960, the TX2 computer that was at the Lincoln Labs at MIT. And there are resistors and transistors and capacitors, and they were soldered together by somebody with a soldering iron to connect them together to make electronic circuits out of them. Okay, this is called discrete components. 50 years ago, something very important happened. In addition to the birth of Madonna and of Michael Jackson, but just to kind of give you the right frame of, you know, of time span, this thing was built, actually, I think September the 12th, so it's just a couple of days more than 50 years ago today. This is the first integrated circuit. And it's got one transistor and a couple of resistors on it, and that's what it was. It had an extremely small number of components. So that was 1958. It was the first time that essentially the technology for interconnecting these components and manufacturing them as a single unit was developed, was the potential for automation. And the whole history of what's happened since then have been packing more and more components of more and more different kinds into smaller and smaller pieces of silicon, which is the substrate that these integrated circuits are based on. There was a remarkable paper, which there's a link to on the reading list for today, by Gordon Moore from 1965. So this is 7 years after the first integrated circuit was created. And this was not a scientific paper. This is a sort of popular electronics paper. And I urge you to download it. You won't be able to read all of it. Some of it has to do with manufacturing details and so on. But the basic point is pretty clear. Cramming more components onto integrated circuits, with cost falling as the number of components per circuit rises, by 1975, economics may dictate squeezing as many as 65,000 components on a single silicon chip. Okay, so
do you have any sense as to whether 65,000 is a big number or a small number? Do you have a show of hands for big? Small? Small? What?
What's the number today? How many components fit on a chip today?
Millions.
How many?
Millions.
Millions?
Millions.
Do I hear
Piker? Piker.
Yeah, millions. Okay, so do we hear another number? We have millions.
It's got to be, when was this written? 1965? So billions.
No, what is it today?
What is it today?
No, I know, but if it was 65,000 in 1975.
No, he was saying he was in 75, he was thinking it could get to that unbelievably large.
Yeah, this was 10 years in the future. This was 10 years in the future.
He was nowhere close to 65,000. He was like at 16 components.
Okay, so we're gonna see this in a moment.
Yeah. So how many components would you be at now? Well, imagine that you can go to like the mobile station and buy a 2 gigabyte chip for your camera in a gas station. You know, because this I've done. And 2 gigabytes is 2 billion, and there are, let's say, 10 bits in every byte. So you're at 20 billion in the thing you can buy in a gas station. I mean, not even like really super sophisticated.
So the answer is a few trillion. This is sort of the high end of the manufacturing scale now. And there's a whole interesting thing about whether now the components are getting so small that you have to worry about the fact that atoms are actually of finite size and you can't make them, you know, any smaller and so on. But we're not going to get into that.